G'day and kia ora rugby fans. This is That Rugby Podcast, hosted by The Sports Booth. I'm your Kiwi half of this podcast, Luke, who enjoys a full trophy cabinet, running rugby, and whenever the Bledisloe comes around. With me is the Aussie mate, Husey, who loved Eddie Jones and now despises him, is used to being let down, and can't actually remember what it's like to see a Bledisloe win. Tune in for 30 minutes of no-nonsense rugby chat, a bit of Trans-Tasman banter, and maybe a few laughs, if you're lucky. Get yourself set and engaged as we kick off That Rugby Podcast.
Six Nations is coming up to its final week, and we're going into it in a scenario that many of us thought wasn't going to happen. Ireland looked all set to complete another Grand Slam 2 years running, but Borthwick's battlers come out of nowhere, and with a drop goal to finish it, you just hate hearing England win on a drop goal, don't you? England out of nowhere take out Ireland 23-22 in a thrilling Six Nations match. The thing is, that might not even be the best game of the weekend, though, for the Six Nations, because down in the Mediterranean, in the beating heartland of the Azzurri, Italy defeats Scotland 31-29. Incredible stuff out of the Six Nations. Italy, we look now back at their season in retrospect, you know, 3 points behind England, not bad, right? A drubbing by Ireland. Okay, that one's not so great. But then a tie with France, which should have been a win if the rules have been followed correctly. And now a win over Scotland. In their last week, they're coming up against Wales, right? This could have potentially been a three-win season for Italy, right? Yep. Not bad results as well. And then the game against England as well, that could have been another win, right? So we could have very easily sort of four-win Italian side this season. I know if ifs and buts were almonds and nuts, you'd never go hungry. But, you know, it's still very impressive from the Italians, right? And we were speculating through the season, has Italy really performed up to par to be in the Six Nations? I think this victory is a resounding yes, that Italy is a competitive side within this tournament.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They've proven, I think, a lot of people wrong, and I said after that Rugby World Cup, it's shambolics. It was against the All Blacks. They needed to show that they were still a Tier 1 nation. And beating, like, getting the win is important. I think it's so important because typically, again, they lose those games. They find a way to lose it, literally, or even draw it, as we saw. You know, again, sometimes circumstances out of their hands, but it still happens. So it was big for them to win it. It's just crazy now to think that we're going into this week and the talk of the town was, hey, if England beat Ireland and Scotland beat Italy, we've got a showdown for, you know, Scotland versus Ireland for the Six Nations. Now it is, if Scotland beat Ireland and England beat France, England somehow take home the Six Nations, which would have been, you were probably one of the few that said this, you said they were bolters a little bit out there, but there would have been many between you and anyone else picking it. So
I think I even picked them to come second in the Six Nations. I think I predicted them to my official prediction was that they would come second. So where are they sitting on the table right now? Second. Where are they likely to finish? Well, no. If they lose to France, they won't finish second. But they've had a hell of a run in this tournament. They stand every chance of coming second, and if circumstances play out their way, they could come first. Now, I still think Ireland is going to take it. I think they are going to beat Scotland this week because I believe they are playing in Ireland.
They are. I shall be in Dublin, actually.
Oh, very nice.
On that day, so hopefully.
Just that's a few pints of Guinness for me.
I will. I was hoping for an epic showdown, and if Scotland had beaten Italy, it would have been just the atmosphere would have been incredible in Ireland. But again, still, I think it still will be buzzing. But even though the Grand Slam's gone, and just quickly on that English game, I think England played their best game, and I want to say since Borthwick took charge. I managed to watch all of it, and their attacking, they looked similar to Ireland, and defense was a lot better. People were saying this was Ireland's worst game in a long time. I don't think it was actually, they didn't play that bad. I don't think it was Ireland's best game. I would definitely give them that. Like, it wasn't like they were at their best. And to lose by a drop goal, you know, that's what shows how good of a team Ireland are. Like, they weren't at their best. They weren't at their worst, as some people were saying, oh, we played our worst game for years. I don't think that's quite true. I just think they didn't play as well as they could, and they'll look back and probably be disappointed with that, but they still played a fantastic game. There'll be some questions with, you know, the TMO and this and that around. I know there was Tad Furlong took a mini dive when he got contact to the head, and that wasn't reviewed, and it looked bad live.
Yeah.
I didn't see any more replays of it, and then there was a foot on the touchline in the lead up to one of the English tries. But not too long ago, that was happening for Ireland as well, with James Lowe's foot on a touchline leading up to a try. Again, these things happen in rugby. These things get missed. Ireland were within, you know, 1 point of winning this game, within a drop goal winning this game. It is an interesting discussion point as well, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion. A lot of teams now, you get, you know, you used to see rugby, and within 2 minutes of the final whistle, a team's holding onto the ball no matter what. They're going to, you know, one-off runners, hold onto the ball, 2 minutes, try and kick it out. Now, and more often than not, even with a minute to go, we're seeing a box kick and just getting rid of it and just saying, back our defense, let's hold on here. Now, Conor Murray did this for the Irish. I think it was a minute and a half left, decided a box kick, end up losing the game. I'm still of the essence of why wouldn't you try and hold on to the ball there and just waste down the time. Like, I haven't seen it in such a long time where a team goes there. They back their defense, which I get, I understand, but you're giving the ball back to the opposition for an opportunity.
Yeah, I guess they're worried about if you're holding onto the ball within your own, let's call it your own side of the field, with, you know, close, you know, from your 22 back, or even, you know, a little bit further than your 22 back. If you then give away a penalty there by not releasing, they've got a shot at goal to win. Or alternatively, if you don't give away the penalty and you lose the ball, then you give up possession and they can try and score anyway. For my mind, I'm sort of in agreement with you. Like, why would you not just hold on to the ball, just be really careful with your running of the ball, go in pods, ensure that you got clean ruck play and things like that. You know, we've seen teams go huge numbers of phases without giving away a penalty, and the defense are giving away a penalty either. You only need to think back to the final of the Rugby World Cup to think about, or even Ireland versus South Africa in the World Cup to think of that as well. So, or South Africa versus England again, like a lot of those games came down to that. So yeah, for me, it seems like if you're going to, as well, when you're going to give it away, you should have, or kick it away, you should have some structure to how you're going to do that. Like, you should be maybe a little bit more tactical in where you're kicking, or if you're going to kick, do it a little bit, even a little bit shorter than maybe full distance, to ensure that you get people there ready to tackle the ball, and you also have the rest of your defense lined up so they can't just swing the ball out wide and run around you a bit, as England moved the ball very efficiently in that last period of the game. And Ireland was just sort of out on their feet a bit. And even before the drop goal, they'd given away a penalty advantage. Mm-hmm. So England was going to have a kick attempt anyway.
That's my big thing as well, just to follow on with this, is when you're more likely, and I'm sure the stats would back me up here, I haven't gone to my own done research, but surely you're more likely to give away a penalty on defense and attack.
That's what I would think as well.
If a team's desperate to try and get the ball back in the last minute and a half, they're more than likely going to give up a penalty as well. So they give up a penalty, you chew down the clock a bit more. Like, just to me, it seems like rugby's gone away from that. And I'm not saying Ireland are wrong for doing it, because I think 90% of teams would do it. Like, I don't think this is a revolutionary thing that you know, Conor Murray and Ireland did. But to me, it just seems backwards. It seems, why would you kick the ball there? But yeah, interesting, I guess, topics. I think, I'm in agreement. I think as good as that win was for England, it probably wasn't a game of the round with what Italy pulled out in Scotland. And I'm glad, and again, the consensus around the rugby lads I was with, oh, this is good for rugby, which it is. Like, you want competitions and as many
teams. This whole week was good for rugby. Exactly. Let's be honest.
Yeah. You want as many teams to be able to win and as many competitions to be as close as possible. So, like, we had a fantastic Rugby World Cup where we had, probably for the first time in many years, four really decent teams that could have won it. Where you have a Six Nations where, look, Ireland probably take it out, let's not doubt. I just can't see Scotland going into Ireland and doing it. But there's a chance. We've seen now that Ireland have been beaten in the Six Nations. So I go, as long as there's these games happening, these, you know, these results happening, it's really good for rugby. Saying that, I'm also a All Blacks fan and would love to beat everyone. And I'm assuming you'd say the same. If you're a Wallabies fan, you want your team to win every single game. You don't go out there to lose. So as good as it is for rugby, you know, the Irish, I imagine, are pretty gutted. And rightfully so, I think, because, again, as I said, I don't think it was their best performance, but played one hell of a game. The only other game this round was Wales-France in Cardiff. Wales fought for a good first half and then fell away in the second half as the French ran over that. But, yeah, Six Nations going into its final week, coming down to the wire, which I don't think many people expected.
So I think if I'm reading and if I understand the table correctly, so Ireland's in the lead with 16. Now, Scotland and France, highly unlikely to win from here. They need to get a win and a bonus point, and Ireland needs to lose by, like, 76 points.
Yep.
So highly unlikely to happen. They need to win by some absurd measure as well. So I guess if Ireland lost by 40 and they won by 40, that could do it, right? For the points differential and then the actual competition points. England's in a better position to win because if they win and get a bonus point and Ireland don't win or get a bonus point, England can get it. So Ireland's still by far in the most comfortable position here because they've played four times, got four bonus points, won three, lost one. England's got no bonus points but the same win-loss record and a far worse points differential. So Ireland's sitting pretty comfortably in the driver's seat. Wales, look, it's going to be a tough ask for them to even get a win this season now. I mean, they are playing at home, but, you know, Italy's just shown this week that they are not a side to be taken lightly. Wales has had not the best tournament. They've had some close results, though. You know, 1 point against Scotland, 2 points against England, a drubbing by Wales, and then, you know, a not close game against France. But they go into this last week against Italy, which is, look, if Gatland's men are going to show anything, this week is the week to show it.
Definitely. All to happen in the Six Nations. And we will keep you up to date as it all unfolds next week. So make sure you stay tuned for that. The battle for the All Blacks 10 jersey is now heating up. We spoke on this a couple of weeks ago about the Wallabies 10 jersey, which battle continues to go on and is going to be fascinating for the rest of the year. But now it's time to talk about the All Blacks 10 jersey. Now, there's obviously a front runner with that man being Damien McKenzie. Been there, done it before, obviously. Fullback slash fly half, first five, whatever you want to call it, is probably the leading man for the 10 jersey. But there's a lot of good performances coming out of New Zealand in the battle for it. Stephen Perefita from the Blues has put his hand up the past few weeks. Obviously a tough loss to the Hurricanes this week. You've got Brett Cameron, who's now played in three Hurricanes games that have resulted in three Hurricanes wins, with no backup first five on the bench. So he's played full, you know, 240 minutes. Again, has an All Blacks cap next to his name. And then the last option are the three, I guess, first fives down in Christchurch and Crusaders land, Kimura, and then they've got Rahana and Fergus Burke, who two of them injured at the moment, one young budding under-20s star but struggling to get a win on the board for the Crusaders, which we all love to see. So, look, to me at the moment it's a Damien McKenzie position to hold. I can't see Razor kind of going anywhere else. I think Perefita gets in there. Perefita's ability to cover 10 and fullback puts him nicely for a bench spot. Obviously, he's played a couple of All Blacks games. And then I think now third in line, which has kind of come out of nowhere, is Brent Cameron, who's the Hurricanes first five, who you won't hear a lot about. Isn't anything special, I would say, but is a good game manager. And as you can see with that Hurricanes talented backline around him, is doing a job. But a lot for Razor to dissect, I imagine, and then in the coming weeks and to see how he breaks it down. Hughesy, your thoughts on your Trans-Tasman rivals in the number 10 most important position in the world?
Damien McKenzie of that lot scares me the most, I would say. I think he is really stepping it up in Super Rugby. I think in that Chiefs game against the Reds, even though they lost, it was a – he was still – he looked like the best player on the field. I think he's got – he's such a dangerous weapon, I guess. Like, it's just – he's got that running threat like Richie Mo'unga had as well. He does scare me a lot, and his confidence, his confidence is a big thing. Like, he's got that been there, done that attitude. You never really see him rattled. I've been a big fan of McKenzie for a couple of years now, as people that have listened to the podcast would know. I think you're right in saying he's the prime pick for he's probably would be confident. You could be confident that he's getting fitted for a jersey, is how I would phrase it.
Yeah, totally. I couldn't see him not in the All Blacks setup. It is an interesting topic as well. As say you take Damon McKenzie, touch wood, cross my heart, bless my soul, gets injured, and let's say obviously would never want that to happen. Mm. Now you've obviously got Perifetta, but then you haven't got this plethora of tens that, you know, the All Blacks are used to seeing with depth-wise coming through. Now, we know Beauden Barrett is able to come back and play for the All Blacks and signed on till 2027 and everything on, but he won't be back, I don't think, for those July tests or even the Rugby Championships. So very potentially, you know, we've got to look at the options around that. And I look at what's coming up versus Australia and what we talked about last time or 2 weeks ago, and I go, is this the first time in a very long time that the depth actually in the 10 jersey, you could say, falls to the Wallabies' strength? And again, I still think out and out, like Damon McKenzie, best 10 out. Like if you're picking a 10 out of the two nations, yes. But let's say we take Damon McKenzie out of it. Stephen Perifetta, I don't know if you can put, I could put the argument as an All Blacks fan that he's better than the rest of those 10s in Wallabies' colours, but I don't know if many would. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's not
I think most of the, you know, it's funny when we talked about the Wallabies tens, and I am going to bring it back to this briefly. When we talked about that, sort of, this was sort of first week of Super Rugby. I thought Noah Lolasia was in the driver's seat. I think the Brumbies have underperformed and he's taken a back seat now. I think he's heading towards the back of the pack, if anything. You know, Linna's really stepped up. Carter Gordon's played decent. Well, Tane Edbitt, I think, has taken the best steps forward out of all of them. And I don't think Donaldson has been bad either. I think he's actually been pretty decent. I think Edmed has done the most to advance his cause out of all of that. I still don't think he's probably leading the pack yet. But I think his stocks have risen the most while Lolasia's have fallen the most. I think if I was to put a favorite on it now, it'd probably would be Ben Donaldson, just because he's already played for the Wallabies before. Not because I necessarily think he's the best. I just think if you look at them, Tane Edmed, lack of experience. Linna, lack of experience. Carter Gordon, inconsistencies in his game. And same for Noah Lolasia. Plus, Carter Gordon's also got a bit of the stain of Eddie Jones on him still. Noah Lolasia's got the stain of previous Wallabies coaches on him as well. And the underperformance of the Brumbies. So if you look at all that, you would say, okay, well, Ben Donaldson, you know, the Force have not been playing well, but no one really expected the Force to do super great. I think people thought they would be a little bit better than what they are, but I don't think anyone expected them to be world. But no one expected them to be what the Reds are, right? The Reds are playing what people thought the Brumbies would play like this year. For me, I would say Donaldson and Edmed would probably be the two favorites at the moment. I think Carter Gordon's up there. I think I could see an argument for Carter Gordon to be in there. I think those three are all pretty close to each other. I would just say that maybe Carter Gordon's mistakes have hurt him, just as I think Edmed's mistakes in the Highlanders game have hurt him as well. And that's why I put Donaldson up there as well. You know, missing a couple of kicks as well. The direction of the Waratah side in that game wasn't the greatest. But I think he's done some individually brilliant things as well. So now when you consider all that next to New Zealand, are you talking about total depth. Like if you were to take your top piece of the off the board, do I think they'll back up? Whose nation's backup would be better? So let's say we've got Donaldson and McKenzie. I think McKenzie is far above Donaldson there. But let's say then Donaldson and McKenzie both get wiped out with injury, and then we had Edmund and Perifetta. They'd be pretty on par, maybe a little bit. You could have the advantage to Edmund just based on how the Waratahs have played the last couple of weeks, how he injects himself into the game, how he's really steered that team around the park. I think for the most part, it's been really good. What's even better than this is that this week we will maybe get an answer to who's the better 10, because the Waratahs will play the Blues. And that will be in Allianz Stadium as well. So in Waratahs home turf, where they just lost a game to the Highlanders, you know, how do the Waratahs respond again after that? How does Edmund respond to that added pressure of him being praised and then potentially costing his team the game? How does Perifetta play having just lost to the Hurricanes, you know? It's going to be so we might get that question answered there. Then if you take those two off the board and we're looking at our 3, 4, and 5 option, there's a lot of uncertainty around the New Zealand 10s. We look at the Aussie 10s. Your number 3, let's say it's Carter Gordon. I think he's Wallaby standard. I think he can play for the Wallabies. You look at your number 4. Let's just say it's Noah Lolesio because he's played for the Wallabies before. We know he's Wallaby stand. And then number 5, if Tom Lynott is your fifth best first 5, I think you're in pretty good shape, right?
Yeah,
and I think 100%. He's Wallaby capable, you know. So, yeah, in that regard, I think you just if you were to say that depth just is a function of how many players do we have that we think are capable of being international players, I think yes, the Australian side wins there. If you say who's got the best first fives, I think the power of Damien McKenzie is still such that you would put New Zealand ahead in terms of he's healthy and he plays 60-70 minutes for the All Blacks, that's still a greater benefit to New Zealand than what Australia having that depth is.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with what you said, and I believe we're pronouncing Liner. I think it's Liner.
So Liner, yeah.
Liner.
Okay.
I'll take credit because I think I started calling him Liner, and then you've just jumped on board with it. But I look at it and I go, it's not good looking when you've got a Welsh number 10 playing for the Highlanders. If you know what I mean? Like, you got a Welsh number 10, so we can't consider the 10 for the Highlanders as an All Black because he can't play for the All Blacks. Then we go, okay, the Crusaders are now 0-3 and have had two different fly halves and neither of them have delivered. So then we've only really got three options because Perifetta, Brent Cameron have played, I'm pretty sure, every single minute in the first 5 position for the respective teams. And then you've got Damien McKenzie and potentially Josh Ioane, who is in the Chiefs' colours. But again, there's just more questions than answers, I think, with the first 5 position at the moment.
Yeah, for me, I wouldn't be too worried as a New Zealand rugby fan, though, because whoever seems to pull on that 10 jersey for the All Blacks seems to unlock something in them, you know?
Yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be too worried as a New Zealand. I'm not looking at this as an Australian fan and just being like, let us know, here we come. I'm not going to overreact like that. You know, I think there is, there's certainly more questions than there usually is for New Zealand around this position. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing because questions inevitably get answered. So you'll find it. And it's usually when it comes to New Zealand first fives, it's usually a pretty good answer.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. I couldn't agree more. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what Razor does with his first team. And again, as we've said, DMAC looking likely to be the number one opportunity with that. Bowden obviously still in and around the picture as well. We'll come back into it eventually. Crusaders and Reds, two teams we're highlighting today purely because of their run-ins over the next 6, 7, 8 weeks and where they sit at the moment. So the Reds are currently 2-1. Crusaders are 0-3 for the first time since 1996. And as you all know,
first year of Super Rugby. It should be highlighted as well.
All reveling in it. We are all enjoying it.
We're all united. You know, if we're united in our you know, patron of the Chiefs. I don't know. I don't know if we're linking up on the camera properly, but yeah, we just, you know, we put aside our differences. Australia and New Zealand can unite over one thing, and that is seeing the Crusaders suffer.
We can. So, what I thought we'd do is run through kind of the draws for both of these teams, look into it, and go, what are their chances of winning? What are the chances we see a potentially 0-7 Crusaders side?
Yeah. Well, let's. I'm going to put on my statistical analysis hat here. I'm not going to use any statistical analysis this, but let's look at it. So Crusaders so far are 0-3. Week 4, they are home against the Hurricanes. This is a big chance for them to snap their losing streak. You know, first real home game of the season, because their last home game was in Super Round in Melbourne. And that's really nobody's home ground this year. So big opportunity for them. However, the Hurricanes are currently 3-0. I will point out that their first win was against the Force. However, they then beat the Reds in Super Round. And the Reds are one of the teams we're highlighting as having some good form after having just taken down the Chiefs. That was a home game. That was classified as a home game for the Hurricanes, but as we mentioned, Super Round there. Then they won at home against the Blues. So they haven't had, I guess, a big away win. I'm not going to classify the Force win as a big away win. So that, to me, this is probably the game to snap the streak to before going 0-7. Before going 0-6, the next opportunity will come in their week 8 game, which is their 7th game. After that, they then play away at the Blues. Tough game to win. Blues aren't slouches this year. They're 2-1. Their one loss is to the Hurricanes, where they were away. Other than that, they beat the Highlanders and the Dura, who just beat the Crusaders. So, you know, not a given win for the Crusaders. Then they have the Chiefs. Now they're hosting the Chiefs at home. The Chiefs did beat the Crusaders earlier this year, only by 4 points in a great comeback by the Crusaders, but that was a home game for the Chiefs. This will be a home game for the Crusaders. I think this probably isn't mentioned enough with the Crusaders' 0-3 start, is that they haven't played a home game this season. That, I think, is a big impact. They've had to play 2 games in Australia in a row, one in Melbourne and then another in Queensland. Both horrendous places to live and play. So, you know, tough luck for the Crusaders there. So they haven't played a home game. They haven't played in the most attractive of spots. So they'll get two home games here. And I think this is really where we'll see the real quality of Crusaders fans. You know, are they going to show up for an 0-3 team or a potentially 0-5 team? You know, are the fans going to be there to cheer on and support their team? Once they get through that gauntlet there against 3 other New Zealand teams, all of whom have winning records, they then get a week off before they travel back to Australia to play the Waratahs at the Waratahs' home ground at Allianz Stadium. Now, this again is another chance. This is the if we're talking about going 0-7, this is the next really big game for the Crusaders to avoid going 0-7. After that, they play the Force in Perth. Force still difficult to play in Perth, but I think the Force this year probably not going to be. I think that's a bridge too far. I think the Crusaders would still be. I think even if the Crusaders were 0-7, they'd still probably be favourites against the Force there. Because the Waratahs game, I guess, is another opportunity. So I think they've got, in the 4 games coming up, we could easily see a 3-1 Crusaders streak in that time, or an 0-4 streak in that time. You know, I think the Blues game is probably, I'm going to look like a real idiot here, but I think the Blues game is probably going to be a very tough one considering they're playing away. Their 2 home games plus the game against the Waratahs are the ones where I'm thinking, okay, Crusaders can still go into this with an edge of, for the 2 home games, playing at home for the first time this season. For the Waratahs, look, the Waratahs game was starting to slide back towards the Crusaders' way towards the end of the game. They put some points on the board. It was only some very stout defense and desperation from the Waratahs that held them in there. Right? The Waratahs, it's going to be tough for them to replicate that feat. It will be. It's hard to beat the Crusaders twice in one season. It is. We know this. We've seen this. So we could potentially see an 0-7 Crusaders. Equally, we could come out at the end of this and see a 3-4 Crusaders or even potentially 4-3 Crusaders. So neither of which are still great scenarios for the Crusaders to be in. They're still in an 0-3 hole.
Yes, and they are. But in saying that, even if they go 0-7, I'm just going to run through their next lot of games because they have had a front-loaded schedule. So say that yes, the unthinkable happens. I waking up and I'm in a dream because the Crusaders are 0-7 and all Crusaders fans are having a nightmare. Then they go the Force again away, but as we've said, probably going as favourites. They then go the Rebels at home.
At home.
Go the Reds at home, which again, we know the Reds and we're going to talk about them very soon. Could be in a very good position, so I don't want to write them off. They go against their rivals, the Highlanders, in Dunedin, which again is only a 3-4 hour bus trip, so that's not the biggest away game. They then go to the Brumbies, then host the Blues and finish off in Moana Pacifica. So say they are 0-7. Let's go. They beat the Force. They beat the Rebels. They beat the Reds. They beat the Highlanders. Let's say they beat the Brumbies, lose to the Blues, and then beat Moana Pacifica. They finish 6-8. Which I believe, if I'm correct, in 2023, the eighth team finished 5-9, which was the Reds, and the sixth team, your Tars, finished 6-8. So as much as it is doom and gloom that they'd be 0-7, I still see a realistic chance that an 0-7 Crusaders side makes the finals, which is absolutely nutty to think. Again, don't get me started with an 18 playoff in a 12-team competition. It's stupid. But it is. It's just one of those things that you go, they could be 0-7 and make the finals quite easily.
And they'd be scary once they're in the finals because they're coming off a pretty decent string of victories as well, getting their stuff together. They wouldn't be playing a home finals game unless there's extraordinary circumstances coming towards the end of things. But they've shown that they can win away from home as well. I mean, the last two finals, they've won and they haven't been at home. So, yeah, Crusaders, this, you know, I wouldn't be tossing my jersey on the fire just yet. But as I said, we'll see the real quality of Crusaders fans these coming weeks.
Now let's jump into the Reds. The Reds, who are currently 2-1, could they potentially be looking at a 6-1?
Yeah. Let's have a look at their record. This their upcoming schedules. So they're playing the Rebels in Melbourne. That should be a win for the Reds. You know, the Rebels have pulled off two victories in a row. One of those was against the Force. The other was against Moana Pacifica. Two of the perennial bottom dwellers of the competition. That said, you know, Moana Pacifica have also beaten Fiji. So there's a whole lot of jumbled results this year. That being said, I still think the Reds are the heavy favorites in this one. Next, they travel to Perth to play the Force. Again, Reds heavy favorites for that one. Then host the Brumbies, which I would give the edge to the Reds there because the Brumbies haven't been performing and B, the Reds have it at home. They have a bye. Then they are away against Moana Pacifica. And where's that game being played? Anyway, Okara Park is in New Zealand. So in New Zealand for that one as well. So they're traveling across the Tasman for that game. After Moana Pacifica, they host the Highlanders, which they stand a very good chance of winning. Then they host the Blues in week 10. And that's probably at that point where I would take a game away from them. I think all the other ones you could see. So 2-1 against the Rebels, 3-1. Force, 4-1. Brumbies, 5-1. Moana Pacifica, 6-1. Highlanders, 7-1. Then the Blues. Now they host the Blues as well. So we could even potentially see an 8-1 Reds team if they were, if everything goes right there. If they're as strong as we believe that they are, you know, they beat the Chiefs at home. You know, playing in Suncorp, there's no reason they can't beat the Blues in Suncorp as well. So I think we could even see an 8-1 Reds team.
100%. And then I'm just looking at the rest of their schedule.
Yeah, away against the Crusaders, which will be tough. And that's assuming the Crusaders get back on track. Yep. But then after that, they host the Rebels. So let's say 8-2. Again, let's give the Crusaders one there.
Yep.
Then they play the Rebels at home, 9-2. Away against Fiji, tough game, but I'm still going to give the edge to the Reds, 10-2. Home against the Force, 11-2. Away against the Waratahs. This would be a tough one. And it's the last game of the season as well. So you could either be 11-2 or 10-3. That one's a bit of a 50-50 for me because I still need to see what the Waratahs are about.
And when we look at it, the team that came second last year, the Crusaders, 10-4.
Yeah.
So more than likely, the Reds can keep this role going on, very likely to get a home finals. And could potentially, if they lock up a 1 or 2 spot, have a home semi-final if they win their quarter. And
I feel like I've missed a match in there then. If I said their final record could be 10-3. So I've missed a game in there somewhere. In my final calculations. But yeah, they could either be 11-3 or 10-4.
Yeah.
Depending on the Waratahs game.
As we've said, would end up with them in potentially a 1 or 2 spot and potentially a home semi-final with, as I imagine, if they go on this run, the Queensland fans get behind a winning team and they will get behind this team. And if they go on this run and end up 11-3 and have the second spot, there will be a lot of very happy fans. And I even push it to them that 11-3 this year may even get you the number one spot. Because we've seen the Chiefs now lose a game. We've seen all of these New Zealand sides are at or same level. See, the Hurricanes, the Blues, and the Chiefs are all at each other's level. So we could easily see them losing 2-3 games. So the Reds, right now, what they're doing, the way they're playing, the teams they've already faced and beaten, and the team that they lost to were the Hurricanes, 0-3, 3-0 Hurricanes, who they lost to an extra point. It wasn't like they've been well beaten. So I go, man, this Reds team could be looking at number one, number two spot. And if they get number one and a final at home, game on the line.
Yeah. So I went back, looked through all the matches. They could either, using our predictions and the way that we think things are weighted at the moment, 12-2 or 11-3, which last year would have gotten you second through, would have got you second because the first team last year was the Chiefs that were 13-1.
Yep.
So that's a very, very good position to be in. And then the teams underneath them, those New Zealand teams, any of them could knock off that number one seed. You know, say the Crusaders sneak in at number 8. They could knock out the Hurricanes in week 1 if the Hurricanes go on to top the table at the end of the season. Sorry, mate. Just saying,
don't,
it could happen.
Don't put those words out there. I'm happy hopefully where I am at the moment.
Hopefully now I've cursed the Crusaders by saying that's what they'll do. Hopefully I've jinxed them.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident in a Hurricanes 14-0 season and a Crusaders 0-14 season. I'm pretty confident that's going
to
happen.
That would be, I would be able to live with a Hurricanes 14-0 season if the Crusaders went 0-14. I would make that trade. I would never hear the end of it from you. I would never hear the end of it from you. But I would be willing to make that deal.
And I think many non-Crusaders fans, which is every other team in the competition, would also make that deal. I don't think there would be many that would sit here and not enjoy that. So, look, it's one hell of a ride we're on in the Super Rugby season. And as I said on one of our posts last week, the biggest margin of victory was 10 points between Judah and the Crusaders. And so the Judah won that game. So I go, we're in one of the most competitive environments at the moment for Super Rugby. Mm. We want this. This is exactly what we want. We want teams to be beating teams. It all to be up in the air. I think if this can continue going the way it is this season, we will build this product into something pretty special. So I'm excited. I'm sure you are too. In a couple of big weeks coming up. But can we see an 0-7 Crusaders side and a 6-1 Red side that could turn history?
Love to see it. We'd love to see it.
Thank you for joining us on That Rugby Podcast. I've been Luke. That's been Husey. This has been The Sports Booth. We will talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Peace.